From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of May, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will be here from Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And along the way, we'll check in with Sonny Perdue, actually something we recorded last week with the Secretary of Agriculture. Today, he's in Cincinnati, announcing a reorganization of the United States Department of Agriculture, his agency, and a brand new undersecretary's position, this one to deal with trade. At the end of the time, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, that with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report for Thursday afternoon. It is the 11th day of May. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the line with us is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, I want you to take me through, because we haven't really talked a lot about exactly where we stand in your short and long-term cycles for a while. And you might start with some of the things that you follow on the sun. I made note somebody else had put something out about a lack of sunspots for the entirety of the month, maybe, of May so far.
We did have a little uptick in sunspot activity during the month of April, but the overall trend has been sharply lower over the past 6 months, and overall activity is we're back to kind of the activity level that we were like in 07 and 08, 06, low sunspot activity. Now, the correlation is low sunspot activity has a tendency to have cooler than normal temperatures. And I think you've kind of have experienced that in many parts of the country here this spring. And I'm not necessarily sure you're totally out of the woods yet with another sharp cold wave coming down from Canada. You can see on the 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 that there's a big blob of cold air in the western half in the country, and if that would happen to slide eastward, then we could maybe tee ourselves up for another round of some pretty cold temperatures as we go into toward the end of May. But we'll just have to kind of see that. So that's been one of the reasons why I've been expecting, you know, early frosts and late frosts, or in this case, what we've experienced over the past 2-3 weeks is late frost. We experienced that snowstorm in western Kansas, and I think it's still, if low sunspot activity does continue, it increases the chances that we could have an early frost. Now, you know, how early, and what kind of damage that would do. We'll have to kind of wait and see. We first got to get this crop planted, and then we got to get some growing degree days behind it and see where the maturity levels are as we go down the road. But that's one of the rabbits that I had in my hat as a possible weather issue that could come about during this year. The other one, of course, is timing wise, there's nothing exact about any kind of time cycles, but as a rule, about every 5 years, you get into a droughty type pattern or below normal precip. Now, you probably can argue the case that April and May so far has been definitely above normal in the Corn Belt or many areas of the Corn Belt, but the key weather precipitation is always in that July-August timeframe as the corn and soybean crops made. And a lot of times when you're on one extreme weather pattern, you'll switch over to the other extreme to make things average, because over the long pull averages are averages. And in order to average out the heavy precip that we've had this spring, one would have to maybe flip it over to sharply below normal precipitation levels in the last half of the growing season, and we'll see if that materializes. So those are some of the macro things I've been looking at. There are no guarantees of anything. It's just things that could go wrong. The other thing is I'm still convinced that the dollar weakness is going to be a big story for 2016, and I think that will continue to at least be supportive in the fact that it'll help us stay competitive in the export market. But as yesterday's supply demand tables emphasize, that there's plenty of world stocks out there. They may have tightened a few things up here and there, but overall, there's no real concern about running out of inventory. But that all depends upon what we grow here in the United States.
Speaking of which, I made note yesterday, and I'm sure most everybody else did as well, that while many were thinking that the soybean crop in the United States, the number of acres that we have that should be planted this year, maybe the delay in the corn planting, if it really continues to happen in the U.S., pushing that acreage up, still, USDA said, you know what, we think that we're going to have awfully good exports next year, and we're going to put the carryout for the 2017-18 at 480 million bushels. Many had thought that could go as high as 500 or 700 million bushels. Average cash price for the coming season is $9.30. That seemed like a pretty positive view of the marketplace.
Well, it is for the month of May. We'll have to see whether or not that forecast holds as we go through the marketing year. But one would think that could be a little optimistic given the size of the South American crop. But I think one thing that could maybe help that out, as I previously mentioned, was a weaker dollar. And I think that, and then the other thing is, you know, I've been an advocate that China needs to narrow the trade deficit with the United States. And one way that China can do that is buy more agricultural products from the United States, and soybeans would be one of them. I don't think they have a trade deficit, so to speak, with Argentina or Brazil. So I do think that is one way that China could help maybe narrow the trade deficit, and because that's one of Trump's priorities. And the same way with Mexico. I don't believe Mexico is going to buy corn from Argentina or Brazil or whatever. I just think the logistics is such that they're going to have to buy corn from the United States because most of their processing facilities is built along the Mexican Texas border, and all those trucks move right across the border into Mexico, and they unload and they come back across the border. So I do think that shipments to Mexico is still going to be very stout. I just don't see how Argentina corn is going to compete with that, coming all the way up from Argentina up through the Panama Canal and all the way up through Central America. I just don't see that happening. So I do think both corn and soybean exports, while they're going to be, corn exports will be down some, but I do think that they will still be fairly stout. And, you know, the bottom line is still going to be what size of crop we are going to end up with as we go through the growing season. Chart-wise, both corn and soybean markets are basically tracking sideways, waiting for an event to happen. Either we get to the point where the trade begins to realize that maybe crop prospects may not be as strong as what they've got priced in, or we get to a point where they think that maybe crop prospects are going to be real good. So, but right at the moment, we're sideways. I think we got another 10 days of trading sideways in here, and then the trade will kind of decide on whether or not we want to drift into June and then wait on some summer weather pattern to come along to spark a rally, or if the market decides that it needs to put some premium in the marketplace because maybe prospects are not as strong as what they had anticipated before the growing season began.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Well, while we were talking with Dan, I received an email from Seth Meyer. He's with USDA's World Agricultural Outlook Board. I told you yesterday that there was a little tidbit in the USDA's WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, pointing to one of the reasons that the United States Department of Agriculture had increased exports. Now, I wasn't quite right, and I asked Seth about that. He sent me a note back and said the point of the sentence in the report related to the soybean export number is that the South American supplies, the beginning stocks and production, are flat from 1 year to the next, so 16-17 to 17-18, and there's a return to normal yields across both the United States and South America instead of the inflated yields from last year and this year, last fall that is, and this spring, if you want to call it the spring, or the harvest from South America. He says, when you compare that to U.S. supplies from 16-17 and to 17-18 with the weather-adjusted trend yield and the planting intentions acreage for the United States, it drives the exports from the U.S. higher. So that's the explanation of that number, came from Seth Meyer. Our thanks to him. He's at USDA's World Agricultural Outlook Board. In today's agricultural news, Sonny Perdue is reorganizing his agency. The Secretary of Agriculture is taking the first steps today by creating an Undersecretary of Trade and Foreign Affairs position. Secretary Perdue is in Cincinnati, Ohio at Consolidated Grain and Barge. In a Wall Street Journal op-ed yesterday, he wrote, "Farmers know the benefits of trade," saying, "We're creating a new Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Affairs whose focus will be on promoting U.S. food, fiber, and fuel around the world." This realignment, Perdue says, will help him as Agriculture Secretary to be an unapologetic advocate for American products. His message for farmers is simple. You grow it, and we'll sell it.
You just need to know I'm a grow it and sell it kind of guy. We've got some producers out here that can just, they can knock it out of the park growing it. And that's a great thing. Think about living in a country that would have to be dependent on other countries to feed you. And we're so blessed in that regard. So if these guys and gals can grow it, I'm going to do my best to sell it.
Perdue made those comments during the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's meeting with him last week at the Witten Building, USDA's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The 2014 Farm Bill directed the creation of the Undersecretary of Trade position. There were and will continue to be 8 Undersecretaries of Agriculture. The Undersecretary for Rural Development's position has been eliminated. Rural Development now reports directly to the Secretary of Agriculture rather than through an undersecretary. Well, the National Association of Conservation Districts, the NACD, has reviewed Perdue's plan to restructure USDA's mission areas, and officials there were relieved to see it did not include a workforce reduction. Conservation had been singled out by President Donald Trump's skinny budget earlier this year as a place to cut. The CEO of NACD, Jeremy Peters, says because many of the nation's 3,000 conservation districts are co-located with USDA field offices, local input is critical as the reorganization progresses to prevent any loss of service.
The skinny budget, of course, made some fairly broad statements. We're waiting, of course, for additional details on the budget, which are scheduled to be released May 22nd. So we'll know more about the president's budget then. Until you know, we can see the actual budget and examine it more fully. We're still, you know, very cautious in terms of any proposal. We know there's a 21% budget reduction slated for USDA, and so we're going to be watching that very carefully to make sure that indeed, you know, there will not be negative consequences for conservation.
Again, the conservation organization applauds U.S. Secretary of Ag Sonny Perdue's USDA reorg plan, and we're glad to hear it does not include a workforce reduction. Well, we'll stay with Washington politics. The U.S. Senate this afternoon, just minutes ago, in fact, confirmed Robert Lighthizer to be U.S. Trade Representative. The 69-year-old was a deputy trade representative during the Reagan administration. He was born in Ohio and is a Georgetown University graduate. And finally today, one more story. We'll go to Minnesota, where monthly E15 sales have, for the first time ever, exceeded 1 million gallons. That according to data from the Minnesota Department of Commerce. The March sales totaled 1.03 million gallons, more than double the amount sold in March of 2016. It's a significant milestone in Minnesota and proof more and more consumers are switching to E15, according to Ethanol Producer Magazine. It's cheaper than regular unleaded, reduces emissions, it says, and it's made right there in Minnesota, according to Tim Rodenicki. He's the executive director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, let's check in now with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us this afternoon. Let's start by discussing what conditions really are like in your area. I know you've got a lot of corn, a lot of soybeans planted, and you also had a heck of a lot of rain in that Shelbyville, Mattoon area. How much rainfall did you get?
You know, we range from around 9 to a little over 10 inches of rain over those two systems. You know, we had a great spring previous to that, as we had talked about. You know, as we went through the spring, we were able to get all of our corn planted, and all of our beans other than our river bottoms got planted before the rain started. You know, it looks to me like, you know, our corn greened up just a little bit this week. You know, we had some heat. I think this rain that we actually got overnight helped us quite a bit. A lot of producers were hoping that it would help get their corn and beans up, so it wasn't such a bad thing. But I guess after what everything that we've been through, it sure seems like our crops look better than what I thought they would.
And did your beans come out of the ground?
A lot of our beans have come out of the ground. Seems to me like this rain last night saved a lot of the fields. Surprising, but we dug in some of them over the weekend. And, you know, we saw some necks coming up. We were afraid they were going to break their necks trying to push through in this heat, but didn't find any there last night when we were looking. So definitely a lot of beans came up overnight, and I think we're going to be all right. Yeah. But, of course, the ponds will probably have to be replanted.
Yeah, so they soften that up. How much do you think you'll have in replant in percentage in the area?
Well, I'm just going to guess, you know, it's going to be less than what we originally thought. Most of our corn was up before the rain started. So, yeah, I'm going to say maybe 15, 20% at the most.
Here's the other thing I heard. While you had 11 inches of rainfall, I heard that it got off fairly quickly, too. I was, and that most were surprised by how quickly the water either got absorbed or moved off of most of the areas, and that the ponds weren't quite as big as maybe as you thought they should be or could be with that much rainfall. Is that right?
Well, the first 6 or 7 inches came in the lake was, you know, Lake Shelbyville was low. The creeks were low. The tile was able to handle. The system worked just like it should have worked. The problem was the second system. You know, the first system, water got away really quickly. Second system, it stuck around for a while because the water just didn't have anywhere to go. And so, you know, last night we had about an inch of rain, and it looked like we had 4 because, you know, we still haven't been able to get rid of all the water. But for the most part, it got off quicker than what we thought that it would, especially with that first system. You know, and bottom line, I think going in as dry as what we were helped us out significantly.
I'm glad to hear all about that. I'm sorry we kind of ran out of conversation time to talk about the markets, but I was really concerned about you and the farmers in that area and other areas across the whole of the U.S. that have been inundated. Hopefully everybody's in better condition, and you sound like that might be the case. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. It's the 11th day of May. As always, we're joined by Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome, Todd. Always great to be here.
You know, the farmers, and things are getting better, but they sure would like to have some heat, not only for the corn, for the soybean crop, too, to get things to pop up out of the ground. Do we have anything in the works that will satisfy them?
They'll certainly be happy here in a few days because we do have a sharp warm-up that's developing. we'll see temperatures soar well into the 70s and 80s by the time we get into Sunday and Monday, and minimum temperatures will more than likely hold in the mid-50s to mid-60s. This air mass that's coming in next week is more typical of what we would see in the second half of June as opposed to the middle of May, so it's going to turn into summer here in only a few days from now. We just have to wait a little bit and be patient, but by the time we get into Sunday and Monday, it will be a lot different.
And things change, I suppose, after that, too.
Well, that's why things are a little bit challenging going forward as far as rainfall. The reason we're going to see this big warm-up is because a large system develops off to the west. That will send this warm air far to the north. It will send muggy air far to the north. And it also will develop strong wind speeds, so it will be fairly breezy throughout next week. Now, all of this is going to come to an end at some point next week or into the following week as that entire system moves closer. Initially, what we think is going to happen is that we'll see a number of thunderstorm clusters develop in the northern plains and the northwest corn belt Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Everybody else stays dry. So all these wet areas of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, into the Delta, and even points off to the west in Kansas stay fairly dry through the first half of next week. But then once we get into the second half of next week, that's where rain starts to return. We'll start to see some big thunderstorms redevelop out in the plains. That should most likely happen on Wednesday and Thursday of next week. Then those storms spread back into the Corn Belt and Delta sometime Thursday, Friday, or Saturday of next week. And then everybody turns wetter once we get into next weekend and into the following week as that whole system moves through. So what we're trying to tell you is that even though we do have this nice period of dry, warm, and breezy weather that's coming up, it's all in advance of a slow and big system that chugs on through. And that system is going to make for more than one round of rain next week, initially beginning in the northwest part of the Corn Belt, and then working its way southward and eastward with time, eventually enveloping all areas by next weekend.
Now turn your attention to South America, the Southern Hemisphere, in particular the growing regions in Brazil for their safrinha or second crop corn. I told that they needed a rainfall. They're in their dry condition, but rainfall would help round out that crop. It's been pretty well there.
Well, the southern areas are going to receive a significant rain or two come this weekend and next week, but those areas have never really been all that dry, so pretty much the same old story for the southern third of corn in Brazil, and that's that they've had a good growing season, and it looks like it's going to stay that way. Once you head to the north, it has been a little bit drier over the last 30 to 60 days, and as we move forward, even though there is a chance for some of those storms in the south to move into that northern area where a majority of the second crop corn is located, history does not support a big rain event at this time of the year. We're now moving into the second half of May, which is typically when the dry season is underway. Even though we do see a cool front that'll move on into that region next week, it more than likely will be dissipating. And by the time you put climatology together with a marginal weather forecast, you have to conclude that big rains are not coming up for the northern 50 to 60% of corn in Brazil. Maybe a few thunderstorms next week, unlikely to be a real big soaker.
That's Mike Tenora with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I'm Todd Gleason.